Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Doviak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Doviak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. We're going to look at Fed speeches expected this week, as well as quarter one 2024 returns. We're going to look at some new regulations around robo-advisors. I'm going to expand on what I talked about earlier this year on storm preparation, because there is nasty weather due in Oklahoma today, and it's kind of all I can think about. And then finally, I'm going to answer some questions about target date funds. So let's get started with the bulls and bears market and economic update. This is for the quarter that ended Friday. So these are quarter one returns. And the Dow was up 5.81% this quarter. The S&P was up 10.42%. The NASDAQ was up 8.84%. Gold was up a surprising 9.88%, given how well the market is doing. Oil, West Texas Intermediate Crude front month price was up 16.74%. And the 10-year Treasury was up 37.91%. Right now, a barrel of oil costs $83.29, and the 10-year Treasury yield is 4.26%. The dollar went up about 3.25%, and Bitcoin was by far the big winner, up about 59.5%. You heard me right, 59.5%. Remember, though, when you see these results, Bitcoin dropped by 60% back in 2022, and it actually takes longer for things to come back as a percentage than it does for them to drop. So if something is worth a dollar and it drops by 50%, it's now worth 50 cents, right? But if 50 cents goes up by 50%, you're at 75 cents. So I'm not taking anything from Bitcoin, but I am saying that, yes, it needed to do this if it was going to come back. So the big news of the week is, I think every single person related to the Federal Reserve is going to talk about interest rate movements. Now, I understand it's interesting, and I will kind of monitor all of it. Remember that the person whose words you should listen to the most are Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve. All of the governors are going to have opinions. So all of the members of the board are going to have opinions. But the person whose opinion you should listen to the most is Jerome Powell, and he is speaking on Wednesday. We have three people from the Fed speaking on Tuesday. We have a new person who is being appointed to the board. His name is Alberto Muzalem. He takes the office. He's replacing James Bullard. I'm sure that the new guy's going to want to talk. And then on Wednesday, in addition to Jay Powell, we're going to have Austin Goolsbee, Adriana Kugler, and Michelle Bowman. And then Friday, Michelle Bowman, Thomas Barkin, and Lori Logan are going to speak again. So lots and lots of people are going to be talking from the Fed this week. They're all incredibly smart people. They're much better at economics than you or I can ever hope to be. But you're going to hear many different opinions this week. And the person I always listen to the most is the chair of the Federal Reserve. Right now, that's Jerome Powell, or Jay Powell. So his speech is the one that I'm going to be listening to the most on Wednesday. Why have I been so hung up on what Jay Powell is going to say? It has a lot to do with what's going to happen in the markets. both the stock market and the bond market. You know, as we're trying to look at where things are going to be going forward, the fact that the 10-year Treasury yield went up so much this quarter really suggests that when the Fed actually cuts rates, we will see it reflect in the market. You know, the market is always looking forward. So the reason that they tell you, you know, past performance is no guarantee of future performance is because the market is looking forward. There's also the whole concept of the random walk on Wall Street. Lots of people believe that. I am more of a trend follower, quite honestly, but I do think that it's really important to know that the market is always anticipatory. This is why market timing really doesn't work if you're trying to do it on a day-in, day-out basis, because by the time you see the trend, the market's already seen it and it's already moved. I might see the trend earlier than you do because I follow this really closely, but there's a lot of people who have more power than I have. They're going to see it before me. So I look at longer trends. I certainly don't look at day in, day out stuff. And even looking at longer trends can be tricky because the market gets ahead of itself in a second. So I was actually happy to see the 10-year Treasury yield up this first quarter, because what it suggests to me is there's a chance when Jay Powell actually goes ahead and the Fed cuts rates, we may see it ripple effect through everything else. Because a huge disappointment would be that, you know, people start repositioning, and then by the time they get the repositioning done, the market's already made all of the move it was going to make. This is why they say over and over again that your asset allocation being overall in the right blend of things gives you an overall better portfolio performance than market timing. So just be super cautious. All those things you hear about the market are true. You've got to be really, really careful. And most of the time, it actually isn't even possible. So I'm going to keep up with the Fed, basically, so you don't have to. And then I will certainly let you guys know next week what happens. Now, I will be taping early next week because I'm going to go see the eclipse, hoping it's not going to be cloudy, but I will let you guys know what was said when I tape over the weekend.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I have some interesting information today that if you are using robo-advisors, might impact how your advisor does business. So remember, robo-advising is basically automated advising. It's software that's written so that you're not necessarily working with a human being to make the investment decisions, but rather you're working with a computer algorithm. Well, kind of related to that are advisors who use robo-advising to choose their client portfolios. In fact, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, this was going to be the latest, greatest thing, and there was a lot of push for advisors to go ahead and use the robo-advising because it was logical and it could access more data. And that would be as opposed to using human being third-party money managers or making the decision yourself. Now, I will say there was an event, and I don't remember now what it was. It was several years ago, and it was sort of a dramatic event in the market, and the robo-advising platforms froze up, and the trades didn't execute, and honestly, robo-advising got a lot less popular after that, although no question, with the advent of AI, artificial intelligence, and the continuing influence of technology on how we do things, robo-advising is here to stay. Well, originally, the SEC created a loophole for advisors who are using robo-advising that allowed them to register as SEC advisors rather than registering as state regulated advisors. So usually to become an SEC regulated advisor, you have to manage over $100 million. But this robo-advising exemption allowed them to register as SEC advisors when they had far less money than that. The problem is, with all things that seemed like a good idea at the time, it has apparently been exploited. And as I was reading the summaries and the articles, the why it was being exploited wasn't terribly clear, but I think I know what it is. There are so many advisors in the country that if you are an SEC registered advisor, you are not going to get audited terribly regularly. If you are a state regulated advisor, you're going to get audited much more recently, every several years, and a lot of people don't want to have to deal with this. So they've been calling themselves robo-advisors when, in fact, they didn't qualify for that designation. So now what they've kind of torqued the rules a little bit. You can still get the exemption, but you have to have a website that allows people to access your robo-advising component that is open to the public. So in other words, I can't come to you as a human being and say, hey, I've got this great idea, and I think we should use robo-advising for me to advise your money. Everything that I'm doing has to be accessible to the public on the website. So it's going to cut out a lot of buddy deals. And in addition to that, there was a 15-person de minimis exemption. So I could be a robo-advisor, or I could be working with a robo-advisor as an advisor and be SEC regulated and work with 15 clients individually without incorporating the robo-advisor platform. That de minimis is now gone. So if you're going to call yourself an advisor who utilizes a robo-advising platform, that is all you can do. You can't do other things, and how you're organizing it has to be available to the public. I think what this will serve to do is keep people sharper at their game. A lot of people aren't going to want to have to count on just driving new clients to their website to sign up for their robo-advising, okay? And if you're doing this, this is what you are. Now, if you want to be state regulated, if you don't have your $100 million, then you're still free to do everything the way you were doing it before, to the best of my reading of this. So it's really only trying to smoke out those advisors who don't have $100 million under management, who are putting themselves out as one thing while potentially working with people a different direction. I'm always a fan of regulation, even though it means I get audited more. I think that knowing what's going on with the people who are managing your money is always a good thing. This has been passed. It will go into effect. You know, the people who are kind of grumbling about it are saying, well, this wasn't necessary. Nobody's doing it anyway. I don't know. This isn't something I track. I've never worried about the robo-advisement business taking my practice, so I don't pay that much attention to this. But if you're working with someone who's using a robo-advisor, you might ask them how they're regulated. You might ask them if this is going to impact how they work with you, because at the end of the day, that's what you're worried about.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today I want to talk about some things to do when the weather looks like it's turning funny on you. And by turning funny, I mean the prediction of baseball-sized hail in Oklahoma later this afternoon that's going to cause me to go to my office and park my truck under my car park because it doesn't fit in my garage. So as I was thinking about it, I know we talked about bad weather and financial planning earlier this year. But I wanted to remind you of a few things and expand out on things you might want to be considering. Remember that bad weather can be hurricanes, it can be tornadoes, it can be thunderstorms with hail, it can be all kinds of things. If you live in an area suspect to earthquakes, it can be an earthquake, it can be a landslide. Lots of things are impacted. Some of how you prep for it is the same. Some of how you prep for it is different. But the very first thing you need to do is look at your homeowner's policy and find out what's covered and what falls outside of it. In Oklahoma right now, you have to have a separate earthquake policy. For a long time, they would do them as riders on your current policy, but then we started getting too many earthquakes, and now earthquake policies are separate. And unless the rules have changed post-COVID, if you have earthquake damage, there is a chance your homeowner's policy isn't going to cover it if you don't have the earthquake policy. If you live in California, the earthquake policy is obviously a bigger deal. If you have landslide issues, that also is either a separate rider or a separate policy. If you live in an area prone to flooding, you may need FEMA flood. Now remember, your normal homeowner's policy will cover you if a pipe breaks, but they won't cover you if the water comes from nature. So if a creek floods, or if you're on the coast and there's a hurricane and you get a storm surge, none of those things are covered by your homeowner's policy. You need to get FEMA flood. And sometimes I get pushback from clients who live in flood zones. We actually have one in Oklahoma that they don't want to pay for the policy. But the truth is FEMA flood isn't that expensive. And when you realize that a flood can literally destroy everything by the time you get the water damage and the mold, it's an insurance policy you really need to consider if you live in a flood zone or if you live close to a flood zone. So I hear a lot of things about creating a go bag, and some of the items in the go bag are things that I have, but then I have some other items that they don't talk about. And because this is the Plan Your Prosperity segment, some of my ideas are as related to your prosperity as they are to your finances. Because remember, I make a distinction there. Many, many things make us prosperous. The people we love make us prosperous. Our pets make us prosperous. Our job makes us prosperous. So in my go bag, I have a way to take care of my two kitty cats, the Prosperity Cats, who have their own TikTok channel, under Ask Peggy, if you want to follow me. But I have to take care of my kitties, right? If there's a crisis with a tornado, I have to make sure that they're okay. I have good, sturdy shoes that are part of my go bag because you don't want to be dealing with lumber in flip-flops. I have my insurance guy's information. I also have a flashlight. And the thing that prompted me last night is I don't believe as many times as I've talked about this topic, I've ever talked about checking batteries. Because when I checked my flashlight, it didn't flash. So I had to replace my batteries last night so that if I do get into a jam today, I've got a flashlight that works. So check your batteries. But then here's a couple of other things. Obviously, if you're a guy, have your wallet. If you're a woman, have your purse. Make sure that you have cash, credit cards, all of those things you might need to get your hands on really fast if something went wrong. But the biggest, most important thing that I put where it's going to be safe is my wedding album. All my pictures from my wedding, because lots and lots of people who are in my wedding have passed away. And so if I lost my other pictures, and I know we have pictures on Facebook, we have pictures on our phone, but we don't necessarily have pictures of everybody we care about. You may have other pictures that are more important to you. I'm just able to grab one thing, the wedding album, and I know then that I've got pictures of the people that I absolutely wanted to have pictures of. So you want to get this organized before you're panicking, right? You don't want to say, oh my God, there's an F5 tornado and it's two counties over and I need to run either into my storm shelter or the interior room of my house. Get everything organized now so that if something goes really south, you've got it. Or if you don't want to leave it all bagged up because maybe you need some of it, I also always take my laptops. I take everything that I would need work-related because I have some files on my desktop I wouldn't want to lose. But if you can't keep it in a bag, at least know what it needs to be. Maybe even make a list of what you want to have packed up. And that way, when the bad weather's about to hit, you don't have to panic about trying to find everything.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I'm really hoping that by the next show, I'm going to be able to give you the release date of my cozy mystery, You Can't Cheat Death, that's being published by the Wild Rose Press and should be out sometime later this year. I'm thinking it'll be August or September, but I won't actually know the date until they give me a release date. But the final proof's been sent back, everything's done, and right now I'm just waiting for them to put it on their calendar. I'm very excited about it. The heroine is a financial planner. It is a cozy mystery, which means it's an amateur sleuth. There aren't any bad words, there isn't any sex, there isn't a lot of violence, so it's like a non-violent murder mystery, which gives me a little pause, has for some time, but it's a whole lot of fun. I'm working on the second book of the series, really excited about it. If you want to meet me in person and you're in Oklahoma, I'll be at the Enid Author Festival, and that is April 20th. And I think it starts about noon, but you could look at the Enid Public Library and find out when I'll be there, find out when the event is, and I'll have a booth set up all day, and I would love to meet you in person. So, I had a great question this week. It actually was given to me yesterday at a giant Easter egg hunt that we had for, I think there were 6 or 7 kids. They didn't really stand still long enough for me to be sure. But a good friend of mine who just started a job was asking me about target date funds. And she wanted to know what they were and if I thought they were a good idea. So let's start out with what is a target date fund. It's also sometimes called a retirement date fund. And it is a blend of stocks and bonds of different risk levels. There will be a year associated with a target date fund. So it might be a 2055 fund or even a 2020 fund, even though that date's already passed. Well, the further out into the future you go, the more risky the fund will be. So a 2055 fund will have a lot more stock in it than a 2020 fund will have. Over time, the funds become more conservative. So in the year 2050, that 2055 fund is going to be pretty conservative. So it creates something called a glide path. So when you're younger, the fund is more aggressive. As you approach the fund date, it becomes more conservative, and the glide path is the way that it does that. They're a very good way of getting diversification if you don't have a large portfolio. So if you buy the fund, you're going to own stocks, you're going to own international stocks, you're going to own bonds. So you get a very diversified portfolio. And especially if you don't have a large account yet, it's a really great way to go. Target date funds are also a great way to go if you're doing your own investing and you don't ever want to look at it. Okay, it keeps you from being overly aggressive because you've chosen stocks and bonds and now you're close to retirement and you forgot to change the portfolio and then there's a big market crash. Now, it's gotten some criticism for a couple of different reasons, and I think the criticism is deserved, but there's some easy ways to solve some of the issues. The biggest thing that surprised me about target date funds is they aren't the same from fund company to fund company. So let's say mutual fund company A creates a stable full of target date funds and mutual fund company B creates a stable full and they basically have the same name. So it'll be XYZ company 2050 target date fund or ABC company target date 2050 fund. Well, this makes people think those two funds are similar, and yet how that company handles the risk as you're approaching retirement has everything to do with the allocation. I've seen dates far in the future that had quite a bit of stability to them, so maybe more bond funds, and I've seen funds that are really close to their maturation date that have a whole lot of stock. And so it's this lack of continuity from fund to fund to fund that's probably the biggest criticism that these funds get. So there's two things you can do to solve this. The first is look at the asset allocation. How much stock does it have? How much bond does it have? Now, if you're like most people, you'll say, but Peggy, that doesn't tell me anything. So what I ask clients to do is start with a risk tolerance profile. So figure out, are you aggressive? Are you moderately aggressive? Are you moderate? Are you conservative? And kind of look at that independent of your age. So that when you buy something, if the market goes in a way that's unanticipated, you can stay with your strategy, which will keep you from buying high and selling low. Okay, because we tend to panic at market bottoms and tend to say, I can't do this anymore. So you want to make sure that the portfolio itself matches your risk tolerance level. If the age on the fund is more or less conservative than what you want, you can go out further if you want to take more risk, or you can bring the years back if you want to take less risk. This will keep you from being in an investment that you don't actually understand how it's being invested. And then remember, because they change over time, you need to go in every year, make sure this fund still works for you. The other issue with a target date fund is it literally is having all of your investments in one place. And if you are buy and hold and rebalance to the allocation, this is going to work very well for you. If you're interested in any sort of active management, the only option with a target date fund is buy it or sell it. And so if you're looking to do more on the stock side or the bond side, if you break those investments apart, it might be easier to make portfolio changes. You need to talk to your certified financial planner, see what's going to work for you.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.